Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
I think about you all the time. It's like you got a hold of my heart. Affection loose, connection on, say goodbye. Cause I don't think that I...
Hi everybody, today's guest is singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist Rosie Frater-Taylor from London, England. Rosie and I dissect her 2021 single, Think About You, from her upcoming album, Bloom. Rosie was brought to my attention by my producer Chris, and we truly believe that she is going to be a super well-known artist in the future, that we can proudly say we had her on the show before she was a household name. Throughout the conversation, I was continually floored by the thought process that goes into Rosie's songwriting and how she conveys that to the other musicians she's working with in the studio to achieve exactly what she's hearing in her head. Rosie mentioned that she comes from a musical household, something I can very much relate to, and how that has shaped her as a songwriter. And she talks about a trip to Germany that sparked the initial idea via a voice memo on her phone for Think About You. For all this and much more, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Podcast.
Well, hello there, Rosie. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me, Chris, on your wonderful podcast. I'm excited.
I am excited. And as we were chatting off recording here a moment ago, you mentioned that your mom made you some soup, a vegetable soup, but your dad just brought it into the room to you. It looks delicious. And Chris and I, my producer, are envious. So we hope you enjoy your soup.
You can't have a deep dive songwriting podcast without some very delicious soup to go with it. So
I think tea would be a little more English, but we'll go with soup. We'll go with soup.
There you go.
Well, you know, I want to set this up a little bit, Rosie. You know, Chris and I, our producer for the show here, we get a lot of things that come across our desk. Lots of emails, different publicists and managers that want us to feature their artist. A lot of the people that have been on the show are friends of mine. I've been in the business for almost 30 years. And these friends of mine come on and they've had songs that have, you know, sometimes been around for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And we can talk about them. In your case, you're a newer artist. Not many people have been exposed to you. And we got... the email from your management, and Chris and I were absolutely floored. You know, we did an earlier episode last year of an unknown artist in Pittsburgh, and we feel that we just want to, you know, sometimes feature some lesser known people, but in your case, we just feel like we found a superstar before you're a superstar. Your sound is just... I can't believe, and I hate to bring up age because I don't mean it condescending, I can't believe the material that you're writing as a 21-year-old person. It is just, I don't know where it comes from. And, you know, you've obviously been around a studio. I know a lot of studio trickery. You know, if I want to make a funny rap song, I could make it and kind of fool you and make it kind of sound like a rap song. Or if I wanted to do a metal song, I could use some different effects and make it. I couldn't even begin to try to emulate what you do. It's part jazz. It's part folk, it's part pop, it's part soul, and it just comes from a place that, I don't know what you want to call it, God-given. You didn't take lessons to do what you do, And I can't say enough about it. It's amazing. So congratulations on the success that you have had. And like I said, I think that I think you're going to be a household name one of these days.
Oh man, thank you so much. I mean, yeah, you've got the music in a nutshell there with the folk and the pop and the jazz and the soul. Yeah, I mean that's so kind of you. It's to hear that, because you know I put my heart into this music, and it does mean a lot. You know, it means a lot. So thank you.
Well, like I said, this isn't something that you went down the road and took a couple lessons from your neighbor and started playing. I'm watching you play these videos and playing guitar, and you're doing these runs and these jazzy things on the guitar, and you're singing a counter melody to that, and I can't wrap my head around it. I could take lessons and not be able to do it. Like I said, this is something inside you that you were born with. It's a gift, and it's really cool. You released a self-produced record in 2018. Called On My Mind, and your new album is coming out soon called Bloom. Was the new record self-produced as well?
The new record is almost completely self-produced, bar two tracks. So there's 12 tracks on the album, and I worked with a couple of London-based producers for those ones. But in terms of the writing, it's all mine and the majority of the production, yeah. And on the one we're going to discuss today, that is self-produced, yes.
Typically, again, a lot of my guests have been around for a number of years, or I know them, and we just, you know, we'll talk for a little bit and we'll just deep dive into the song. In your case, if you don't mind, you know, because I typically don't like to treat this like an interview. I like to, you know, have it be centric around the song. But in this case, I'd like to get a little background, if you don't mind. I know that you are in your final year studying jazz guitar at the Royal Academy of Music. So... Mm-hmm. And we'll get there in a moment, but let's back up. What are some of your earliest memories of music?
So I have I'm in the fortunate position of having a musical family, musical parents. So you on the first record and on this record as well, I work quite closely with my dad, who plays drums on the record, and also my mum is a singer. So they are have quite eclectic tastes in music. So. There's definitely memories of being introduced to a lot of what some people might consider niche music, you know, around the house, like when they're cooking and stuff. So those are probably my earliest memories, just like hearing that music. And there's some great like home footage of me, like my dad just holding me on his lap, and I'm like playing his drums and like whacking it really hard. And they're like, oh my God, don't hurt yourself. But I'm like really going for it. Yeah, and then I really started playing myself when I was about 7 or 8. So I started taking drum lessons from my dad. And then I picked up the guitar similar time. And I sort of had those two going on a little bit. I started taking some lessons in guitar. And they were really sort of just working simultaneously for a long time till I was in my early teens. I was very much drummer/guitarist, and that was like what I was really into. I guess in terms of the songwriting, I've been through a few phases of that as well. So I had like a little kid band with a couple of friends of mine, and called Flamin' Hot, best band name.
I like it. I like it.
And at the time, it was very much like quite cheesy distortion on the guitar, and like Avril Lavigne was my little kind of guitar icon, being a woman as well. I was like so I had that. And then a little bit later on in my early teens, I started checking out a lot of an artist called Ben Howard.
Darling, you're with me, always around me, only love, only love. Darling, I feel you under my body, only love.
I don't know if you guys have him or into him in America, but in the UK he's fairly well known, and he's insane guitarist in terms of like arranging his parts for guitar and also his songwriting. So his album Every Kingdom was a big influence for me in terms of getting into songwriting properly. Yeah, so that's sort of the background, I guess.
And it was interesting you mentioned that your parents are musical, because mine are too. I come from a musical family. My earliest memories were in nightclubs and bars with my father. I know people on the show have heard me talk about that before. I've always wondered, where does it start? You know, what if your parents weren't musical? Were you the first one that had this gift, and maybe you'll pass it on to if you ever have children someday? It's really interesting how that goes about, and how it's hereditary, and that type of talent gets passed on through the genes.
It's super interesting. I know so many people as well who don't have musical parents and who are insanely talented musicians and songwriters. Yeah. And you know, so on. You comment initially on how young I am to have made this album the way it sounds. I get that comment quite a lot, and I think it is because I've been fortunate enough to have that sort of like the folk and the jazz and the pop and the world music, which isn't typically what the first sorts of genres you would listen to would be. So I was 15 and I was like walking to school and I had like Al Jarreau going on in my headphones. And it's like you play that to someone in your class and they're like, this is not, you know, this is not what I'm listening to. So I guess that's maybe the benefit of it.
I'm not surprised that people have told you what I said. They can't believe that you're that young. And I didn't mean it condescending. I know you didn't take it that way, and I'm glad you didn't, because it's just, you know, a lot of times artists will start out pop. That's what they grew up with. They heard on the radio. They'll make a record 18, 19, 20. It isn't until they're in their 30s, late 30s, 40s, where they all of a sudden make this jazz record or make this record, you know, and the fact that you're doing this sound that just I can't believe it, that, you know, when I listen to it, the maturity of it, it's a different level, and it's very, very cool. So do you remember the first song you ever wrote and what it was called?
So I'm gonna skip the initial like Flamin' Hot repertoire, because even though there were some hits there, I'll go with the first song I ever wrote for my you know, that I released into the world, was on my last album, and it's called Lullaby.
I cry for dreams. Show to me, oh, so monstrous things. Oh, 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 oh. It's time to sleep.
That was the first project I ever worked on in terms of like music production, and it was mainly just an experiment, really, because I sort of had this idea that I maybe wanted to try and record some stuff, and I'd recorded like some versions of covers that I loved, one being like Katie Tunstall's Big Black Horse and the Cherry Tree.
I said, don't look back, just keep on walking. Ooh. When the big black car said, look this way, he said, hell and day, will you marry me?
Ooh. Ooh. Which will forever be one of my favourite tracks. I think it's a great track. And so it was me sort of branching out into doing my own stuff on Cubase. And yeah, that was very much me sort of bringing together... I guess maybe the earlier Ben Howard-y influence stuff with my later jazz influence, which came when I was about 16 or 17. So I wrote that song when I was about 16, Lullaby, and yeah.
Well, you know, this track we're going to talk about, Think About You, from the new record Bloom. You had mentioned that your dad plays the drums. I can hear the jazz influence. He's a jazz drummer. It's apparent. Who else played on the record? Did you play all the guitars, or did you have other studio music? And the recording sounds fantastic, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot. It's you know, taking on the burden of recording an album yourself is a bit of a process and a journey. You can get madly perfectionistic about it. So yeah, I appreciate that. But yeah, in terms of on the album, I'm at the Academy. I have a lot of friends who are great musicians. So I had a friend called Seth Tackerberry. He's plays bass in my year. He plays a lot of the electric, and you'll hear the acoustic bass, so double bass, on some of the tracks, which wasn't something I did on my old album. It's something I've gone into on this album. And who else? Another bass player I work with called Hugo Piper. He's on Better Days, which is another single I released. And who else? It's my dad doing the drums. And then I've had a few keys players on the album. A really cool producer actually called Chris Heisen. He plays piano on a few tracks, and it's really beautifully sort of like soundscapes sort of stuff. And who else have I got?
Did Chris co-produce the record with you, or is
no,
he just played on?
Well, he produced one of the tracks on the album, but okay. But for all the other ones he's on, it's just me. I was like, I love your piano playing. Can you please play on this track of mine? Yeah, I think that's it really for the people on the album. I hope I haven't missed anyone. No.
Okay. And outside of your home city of London, have you, I'm sure you played across the UK. Have you been outside of the UK at all to play any shows?
Last year, I was actually super fortunate. I did a tour with some German musicians who I met. They did a show here, and I went to the show, and then we sort of got talking, and I went and I ended up touring with them for a few dates in Germany. Yeah, we played a show in Berlin, which was really nice, and they were so nice, so keen. I arrived and they'd learned all my music, and it was so I just sort of, and they got me this guitar, really nice guitar. Actually, funny story, they gave me a Gibson Les Paul Studio, which I loved so much, I went away when I came home and I bought my own one. So
that's great.
Yeah, so Germany, where else have I played? I did a show in Norway, which was nice.
And how's the audience response been?
Well, abroad.
Or just in general, I mean, at home. You know, how are your shows attended, and how's the response in the UK?
Well, I guess, I mean, I've done a lot of these sort of jazz venues, jazzier venues around London and around the UK, because that's sort of my roots. And I think something about the music is, sometimes someone with a jazzier ear can maybe hear some of the subtlety in the music, so they tend to enjoy that sort of crowd of people. And I guess it's where I come from as well, so I have a strong grounding in jazz, so I've done a lot of jazz venues. And yeah, I guess it's I've been trying to gig as much as I can. It's a big learning experience really, and it's sort of taken my musicianship to the next level, playing in front of an audience. I mean, I think they like it. I hope they do.
Well, I imagine they do like it. I'm almost positive of that. Tell us a little bit before we get into the song here about studying jazz and how that's been and how that's influenced your songwriting, because I find that really cool.
Studying jazz, it's been a process, because I started studying when I was about 16. Fortunate enough to be in London, where there's a whole array of youth jazz organizations. So I've been a part of the National Youth Jazz Orchestra, Tomorrow's Warriors, the Junior Royal Academy. And so I really started getting my ear into that sound fairly young, and learning standards and sort of just approaching it with the idea of being a jazz guitarist. That was what I initially saw myself doing. And so I was getting a lot of it enabled me to get a lot of things together to solo, I guess, in a way which a lot of maybe popular guitarists aren't able to, because they haven't had that grounding. Yeah, and I think it opens your ear up a lot. And I've listened and I've played a whole array of different kinds of music and harmony, and I guess it enables you to pick and choose what you like and what you don't like, and take different things. And I think because jazz is such a varied music, it's given me a lot of musical palettes to draw from when I write, I guess.
Well, I it's interesting, because I can hear the influence in your harmonies and even in the musical, the chordal structure, in terms of, you know, listening to this song, even the poppier parts of the song have just this influx of jazz here or there, where it doesn't sound like a normal poppy song.
When you comment on that, to me, that is completely natural to me now, because I've been playing jazz and jazzier musics for like so long. it's sort of, it's not even an intentional thing anymore, just that sort of jazzy flavor. It's more just ingrained into me to approach playing a note or playing a chord or playing a rhythm in a certain way, I guess.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
So getting into the track, Think About You, which was released on January 27th, the song is 4 minutes and 35 seconds long, and it just, you don't even mess around. It just, your beautiful voice, boom, right off the top, the vocals just come right in with only guitar, and I'm going to set up this first verse, and I'd like you to talk about it with us. I think about you all the time. It's like you've got a hold of my heart, affection, lose, connection. Say goodbye, because I don't think that I can. Perfection need protection. If I hold too tight, you better put me right. My reflection, lose connection. Oh, just tell me why. So what's this about?
It sounds a little bit depressing when you put it like that.
I've had people say that when they get their lyrics read back to them, it's a strange thing.
It's like, oh God, calm down. But
What's going on here?
So, I guess it's maybe makes more sense chronologically to say that I first came up with the chorus lyrics and melody, and that sort of set the tone of the track. Being like, so the first line of the chorus is, even though I'm with you all the time, sort of sets up this notion of like sort of being a bit obsessed with someone. And I was in a relationship at the time of writing this, and it sort of speaks to it's fundamentally a song about insecurity and how, you know, on the surface it might feel like you're in love and it's a sort of a good thing that you're this obsessed with someone, but going deeper, it's sort of like, you know, so the final line of that is like, just tell me it'll be all right, you know. So when I write, it's sort of, I try to be so like pretty metaphorical and so like have sort of multiple meanings in my lyrics. So I like the idea that a song can be what the listener makes it, and it can appeal to different listeners, or my so-called wisdom can appeal to different listeners. But for me, it's basically about being insecure in a relationship with someone. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's cool that you can express that vulnerability. Do you usually write lyrics first or the chords first and the melody? How did this song come about?
So this one is a bit of a maverick. This song actually sprouted from a voice note. So when I spoke earlier about being on tour, when I was on tour in Germany, this melody, the chorus melody, just came to me, and I ended up recording it as a voice note entitled Slow Jam. Yeah, so it started melody first, which is quite uncommon for me. I'm normally, as you might be able to guess, a harmony gal, uh-huh. Harmonic gal at heart, because of, you know, I love jazz harmony, I love complex harmony. But yeah, this is and this is potentially why the track has a poppier flavour to it, because I started with that voice note, and I knew when I was singing it that I wanted it to have sort of a deep groove, so like a really heavy groove. Yeah, so that's how that started, and that is how I came up with the chorus melody, and then I obviously harmonised the chorus melody using my sort of complex, you know, the sounds that I love in my head.
Even though I'm with you all the time, everything I do, yeah, you're always on the line. In every part of me, oh, just tell me it will be alright.
Yes.
Well, that was another question. Did you provide all the vocals on this? Is that all you?
In terms of the performance.
Well, and the backing vocals, and it was there any other vocalist that sang on this song? It sounds like it's all you to me.
Yeah, no, it's all me on this song.
It's all you.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So we get up to the line, say goodbye here in the verse, and there's three bass and drum hits. And in my notes, I wrote dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It just comes in. It just adds this cool little flavor there for a second. And then on the word protection, about halfway through the verse, the band comes in. And on the next line, if I hold too tight, there's where the oohs come in.
You better put me right. My reflection lose connection. Always tell me why.
It doesn't follow your typical... rhyme or reason of where you place them. They are just uniquely placed, and they work perfectly together. I also noticed that sometimes, depending, and again, the recording's really cool. It'll be panned off to the right or the left on certain words. It almost sounds like you're singing in unison on one word together, but it's like a little breathier than your lead vocal. So it adds this this kind of ping pong thing with my ears. It's just
ears. That was okay. That was actually completely intentional in terms of the second like doubled lead vocal.
It's such a great texture. Like, did you come up with that, or did somebody else? Or
So it's all these ideas are mine. So I'm so pleased that you like them. But yeah, it's completely not an obvious pop song or arrangement. And that sort of stems from this whole thing we were talking about of just musical surprises, trying to surprise the listener.
And again, I want to stop myself, and I'm going to apologize. I am almost throwing this at you, like there had to be someone else in the room that came up with these parts. You couldn't possibly, at your age, come up with this. But it's just, it's mind-blowing. I mean that with complete sincerity. It's just, you thought of that? You thought of doing those vocals like that? It's so cool that I'll use the word again. It just provides this texture that works amazing in the track.
Thank you. I mean, I guess maybe I can try and shed some light on that process. I tend to build the tracks in a very specific way. So I'll start with guitars. So you obviously have the main guitar part going on there, and then quite often I'll double that guitar with either a different instrument or the same guitar to give it that texture. And then I'll add a lead vocal over the top or an idea. And then sort of once I have the meat of the part, I sort of that's when my creativity tends to go a bit mental. And because you'll be able to hear if you've checked out the album just quite how layered everything is. And that's what I love. I love the ability to layer things to build tension and to create harmonies which you wouldn't be able to play normally with just five fingers. And so that is what I'll do with a track. And I'll add more guitar parts. And then with the BVs, I tend to add those last as a sort of final flavour, trying to find the spaces in the track and where they can pronounce things that I would like to be pronounced. Maybe that sheds some light on it.
it does shed light. And you're the first person on the show to say BVs. And for our listeners, she means background vocals. But I like that.
Oh, so. God. Is that just...
No, I knew what you meant, but you know, some of my listeners, I want to keep them in the know of our lingo here as artists, Rosie.
It's,
you know,
it's actually really funny you say that, like, because I've working with my manager for the past 8 or 9 months recently, and he's got all of the marketing phrases that he'll come out with, and I find myself saying this stuff now because I'm just so used to him like talking to me about DSPs and yes, whatever. Yeah, and I sometimes hear myself and I'm like, oh my goodness me.
No, it's great. No, but your BVs, your background vocals, I tried wrapping my head around them. It's a different way of thinking, a different way of writing. What you're doing is very unique and very cool. I love the 9-second musical interlude, I'm calling it here. It's almost like a pre-chorus with no vocals that happens. It's these jazzy drums before we get to the first chorus, and the guitars are just really interesting here, and it almost sounds like if you put huge, big, heavy guitars and heavy drums, like some like progressive metal bands, like I don't know if you've ever heard of Dream Theater and some of these bands. That's what I was hearing when I heard this part. I was like, wow, it's not supposed to be heavy, this part, but to me, it hits me heavy. Before it sets up for this chorus and everything drops out, and it's this single note guitar part that your melody is following on that first line, even though I'm with you all the time.
Even though I'm with you all the time.
That is awesome. Was that always written like that, or was it like in the later chorus in the song where it's full band?
So I mean, the melody came first, and that's actually really interesting. Can I even remember how I came up with that? I think it was potentially a thing of like I was trying to, because occasionally when I can't just so I remember things, I'll memorize the shape and the pattern on the guitar so I can go back to it, like if I need to remember a BV line. And I think I was potentially at the time just trying to remember the melody and the rhythm I was singing. And then I think I thought, oh wow, that actually sounds really cool. Singing and playing that line in unison, it adds a really nice tension and release to the piece. I kept it in.
It is awesome. But a lot of times as younger songwriters, or when you're kids and you're in your first band, I was guilty of it, where you realize the melody you're singing is what the guitar's doing, because you're young and you don't know. And it's kind of, for lack of a better word, you're almost lazy. This, it works perfectly. And like you said, it's in unison with the vocal. It's really cool. The next line is, and again, I'll do the first line in the chorus. Even though I'm with you all the time, that's with the single guitar notes. Everything I do, yeah, you're always on my mind. In every part of me, oh, just tell me it will be all right. And on that line, again, you got the single guitar notes that are doing the melody. And then we get 5 na-na-nas, 8 na-na-nas, and then 5 more na-na-nas at the end of the chorus that are just placed perfectly. And throughout this chorus, there's your background ooze that are happening sporadically, and they're just kind of floating around the whole thing.
Oh, just tell me it will be all right.
If you could lyrically set up the chorus for us.
It's a similar idea to exactly what I was talking about. It's all following that same idea of feeling all consumed by a person, and then maybe even losing touch of who you are. And yes, yeah, so, I mean, that's just the theme that follows throughout the lyrics, I guess. But in terms of the na-na-nas, that they were actually, you might be interested to know that they were actually supposed to be lyrics, but then obviously I sang it like that, and then I think I played it to my mum, and she was like, no, leave those in.
It's been a great debate on the show. You know, my band, I've done so many na-na-nas, and someone actually just compiled a funny video at our Facebook group and put it on, because we had an artist on here that said na-na-nas are just lazy. People don't want to write lyrics.
Another thing I'm not a fan of is like when songwriters go la 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 or na 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 na. You know, I'm just like, come on, it's so fucking lazy to, you know, just sing na 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 or fa la la. And you know, I've never really liked doing that.
Yeah, so. Journey made a career out of it.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people do it. And
in the context of what he was talking about on the show, I agreed with him. And then someone put this video up of like 50 songs that I sing na-na-nas in, you know, kind of as a jab at me. Sometimes they just work. And if you try to recreate what you did there with the feeling and the emotion lyrically, and I think that's what your mom was saying, right?
Exactly, yeah. I think the chorus as well is a really, really speaks to me, my love of reharming and harmonizing melodies, which is something I'd love to do more of, especially as I'm going into the writing of my third album, which is, you know, a long time in the future at the minute. It's just thinking about different songwriting processes and starting with the melody more, just because I love the process of harmonizing and reharming a melody. And in terms of the chorus for Think About You, you've got these super simple chords first time round. But then as we go into the na-na-na section, you've got a more complicated, jazzy
yes.
harmony going on there. I would also, I don't know if you know someone called Lewis Taylor. He's sort of a cult
I don't.
Cult singer-songwriter artist who gave up music ridiculously young for some unknown reason. But yeah, he's a big influence for this track, and I was sort of subliminally had him in mind when I was writing the chords for the chorus there. Yeah.
Well, we come out of chorus number one, and it's straight into verse two, and the whole band is in at the top of this verse. It's not like the first verse where you come in with a guitar and vocal. And the lyric is, thinking about another life, I think about you day and night. Right? Direction? No. Objection. I'm a little shy, but in time I will arrive. Learning lessons speak confessions. If I don't know why, I find it hard to classify. Stolen moments, owed emotions. It'll be all right. There's some deep stuff there.
For me, the line that I was really pleased with when I came up with it. So songwriters do have those lines.
Those moments, of course, where you're like, I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, like the whole stolen moments, owed emotions. I think there's something about the pronunciation of those words there, which I find really satisfying. And I think it sort of summarizes the song really in just that one line, sort of this idea of expecting something from someone and then expecting time from someone. And then like it's followed with the it'll be all right sort of. Me reassuring myself, maybe even doubting myself that I'm sort of recognizing certain problems, but you know it's you know it'll be all right, that sort of idea.
Stolen moments, old emotions, it'll be all right.
Okay, I'll tell you the line I like too is, again, it's that vulnerability, putting yourself out there. It's I'm a little shy, but in time I will arrive. Mm-hmm. Have you arrived?
Well, I guess maybe in a different sense, who knows? But yeah, it's interesting. Because I'm quite a private person emotionally, but then a comment I get a lot about the songwriting is just how honest it is. And
yeah, that's exactly how I'm reading this. It feels and it sounds honest.
So I guess it is. It does work as a certain kind of therapy for me to get these strange thoughts going on in my head out onto paper. And so I guess that line speaks to me feeling, you know, feeling like I'm quite a guarded private person. Yeah, and but in time I will arrive.
I love that line. And something I meant to ask you a moment ago and I forgot. So when you're doing these background vocals and these counter melodies and these just jazzy notes and things you're doing, are these already orchestrated in your head pretty much, you know, the blueprint when you go into the studio, or are these something you kind of, you know, do a couple different takes and figure out what works when you're under the microscope, so to speak?
For me, like the project, so the Pro Tools project that I'm on, that I start on is just, that's it. So that is the final version. So it basically goes from demo to final version, all on the same project. So everything I record will stay in one place. In terms of coming up with parts, I guess it's sometimes it's sort of like an inner sense for what will work. And sometimes, you know, I'll always follow those ideas through because I think it's necessary to do that, you know, necessary to hear your ideas in context. And normally I have to say, like, I'm definitely a person of, you know, don't overthink what you're doing when you're writing, because often that instinct you have is really valuable, especially like being in the fortunate position of listening to so much great music. It's a subconscious thing for me, I find. But yeah, obviously if I think something's rubbish, I'll redo it with a different idea. But
no, of course. I just again, without sounding like I'm I'll just say it. You're a natural. And I it's evident from just watching you play and sing. It's just a talent that's inside of you. So I'm just wondering how much of this you have to actually go in and do. But, you know, you had mentioned something interesting that basically when you start a session in Pro Tools, that's the recording medium that you use, and you set it up, and that working demo ends up becoming the finished track. So there's ideas that come from initially, and you might go, you know, That backing vocal could be a little different. You'll change it, but it's all still within the same session that you initially started.
Yeah, I mean, recording and producing is such an accessible activity these days. I mean, anyone can do it. It's And for me, I wouldn't really differentiate it from the songwriting process itself, because the layering, this idea of layering, is part of the songwriting to me, and so it doesn't really make sense to me, at least, to record everything and then re-record it, but at least not for this body, a particular body of work, but
which also lends itself to what you're saying, though. I mean, the ideas in your head, when you put them down, those are the ideas. You're not changing too much of them. And, you know, I think I could speak for myself and most artists that I know, like they put the idea down and they really, really start to change it. And other people just have this vision from the get-go that sounds like what you have. You put it down and you're off and running. And that's amazing. After the verse number two, we go into that same 9-second musical interlude with those. I love the way your dad plays drums, by the way. it's just, like I said, this part isn't intentionally, I'm using the word heavy, but this part just lifts.
Well, you'll be interested to know, actually, that I actually told him what to play. So I played the drums for him and I recorded it. And because I'm a little bit rusty, he wrote out a drum part for himself based on what I played. So whilst a lot of the jazzier sort of inflections are his ideas, so when we get to the bridge later on, that drum beat there was my drum beat. So I don't often do that, but for this track, I had a very specific, deeply groovy idea in mind. So yeah, I'll let him know though.
That's just great. You make music with your father. I think that's awesome. We come into chorus two, which is the same as chorus one. Same lyrics. Even though I'm with you all the time, everything I do, yeah, you're always on my mind in every part of me. Oh, just tell me it will be all right. And then you get into the na-nas. And then we come in to a 30-second guitar solo. It's, I don't know if, I know it sounds acoustic. Are those nylon strings on that acoustic or?
No, they're super thin acoustic strings, which is a little bit of a trick.
Yeah, they almost sounded like nylon, and the solo is beautiful, and you're doing these sporadic oohs and kind of, it almost sounds like singing, but they're not words. You're doing some melodies that are kind of floating in and around this solo, and again, was the solo laid down first, or was the vocals? And when you were doing the vocals, were they just, do you remember if it was just kind of what you were feeling that came out, or did you have to think about it a lot?
So for the bridge section, that guitar idea was definitely the fundamental idea. So another great UK artist, Leanne LaHavis, potentially you might know of her. Well, she just released an album around the time I was writing this song, and so I had a lot of that in my ears, and she uses a lot of nylon string guitar, and so for this section I really wanted to make a lot out of that, and I took this very specific layering approach, and I wanted to make the most out of these nylon guitar ideas. And then so you have this melody almost inbuilt into the guitar part already, which is You mentioned earlier it's very easy to try to just want to sing what you're playing on the guitar. So it was actually quite tricky to build this section because the guitar part is so involved already. But yeah, so I played the layers, and then I thought, this section, what does this section need? This section needs a guitar solo.
Who played the solo?
Me.
Oh. You keep flooring me. You keep steamrolling me here. That solo is just, it's awesome. That solo is so good. So good.
Yeah, well, I think this idea of having super thin gauge strings on an acoustic guitar is something not a lot. Some people tend to look down on it, I think, because I guess there's a notion of acoustic guitar being super like rich and full sounding, but it's a really unique tone, and it was actually an accident. And I think that, you know, putting thin strings on my acoustic, it allowed me to get those ideas and that tone out in that solo. And I am really happy with how it turned out. So
It's remarkable. And thanks for deflating me as a guitar player, Rosie. I'm going to have to go practice for the rest of my life now. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
That solo is fantastic. I love it.
Thank you so much. I didn't
know from talking earlier that you were talking about different musicians that you go to school with. I don't know why I thought someone else played that. I had seen you play guitar, but none of the videos that I saw you were playing ripping a solo like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I play all of the guitars and the ukuleles and the solos and the vocals, and then everything else is my mates.
Gotcha. Well, we get into what I'm calling the bridge after the guitar solo. I guess you could say this is a third verse, but the melody here changes, and it's I'm feeling like I'm running from the other, thinking maybe we could make some time to build. And I want to talk about that word, to build, but I'm going to say the rest of the lyrics first. I've been looking for a story, looking for someone who can set me, thinking maybe we could make our story real. On that second line, to build, and on the fourth line, story real, you go to a low note. Your voice changes on those two words in the second verse and on the fourth line. Your voice changes, it goes to a lower register, unlike anything else in the song you sing.
Like I'm running from my other, thinking maybe we could make some time to build. For a story, looking for someone who can set me, thinking maybe we could make our story real.
And it's just such a cool, it's like, whoa, where did this come from? It's just such a neat thing. I mean, when I say low, it's completely lower than everything you're doing. Was that written like that, or was that something you just thought of doing? That's really interesting.
Well, I talked a bit earlier about melodies, and I found it really difficult actually to come up with a melody for this section. And I think I was sort of riffing on it, like we were talking, you know, earlier about, you know, ideas that we like, ideas we dislike. And yeah, this was a part that took a little while to get right. And
it's so unique to just all of a sudden have this different voice, and it's only on those four words, on line two on the two words, and on line four on the two words.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't like a thought about thing, but I think I liked the way the phrase was built and how it started and ended, and I thought that sort of matched the tone of the lyrics as well there. So yeah. It's hard to sing as well. I've been trying to play this song.
You know, it's a crazy move that you do there. You like go down an octave. It's really different. We go right into chorus three, which this time the full band's in. You don't mimic the melody on this one. The band's just playing along. Same lyrics as the first two choruses. But then we come to an outro, and the guitar, it's just guitar and you, the vocals at the end. And there might be a keyboard behind there or guitar chords playing. Is that a keyboard?
Yeah, there's a keyboard, and there's also electric guitar going on.
Yes, okay, it is a keyboard. And the guitar mimics that first line, even though I'm with you all the time. The guitar's doing the single notes there, and then you say, everything I do, yeah, you're always on my mind, in every part of me. And the song just ends on me. The song ends like it starts, with just your vocal, and it adds that just personal, that thing, that flair, that touch.
Even though I'm
with you all the time. Everything I do, yeah, you're always on my mind, in every part of me.
So was that always written like that, or was it a double chorus, or is that kind of how you had it in mind to end?
I think I definitely wanted to end with the chorus, because going into the writing of this song, I wanted the poppier thing. I had like a poppier sound in mind, and so I wanted a big sort of, you know, F off outro. And yeah, and I think the double chorus sort of made sense at that point, because that, you know, that tends to be what happens in traditional pop song arrangements. But yeah, I guess I had that similar idea of like the song should end how it begun.
Well, and it's not even really a double chorus though, because you don't get those last two lines in the na na na's in. So you stop in every part of me. It just stops there, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think it's a guitar teacher of mine calls killing your darlings. So parts of the music that, you know, I could have gone the whole way, but it's like, does it need a full double chorus? Because I mean, the chorus is like, it's over 30 seconds long. So I didn't think it needed the whole thing there. And yeah, I thought it was a cohesive way to ending on that phrase. Yeah.
I agree with you. Well, listen, Rosie, I want to, we're going to wrap up here in a moment. I just want to thank you for taking the time. As I said, my producer, Chris, and I get a number of emails weekly of different managers, publicists that want us to feature artists. And there was something about this track, something about you that was just like, wow. And Chris and I keep saying, we want to get someone on here that we could say we had him first before the whole world knows them. And we wish you nothing but the best. Is there anything that you'd like to plug at this point, things you have coming up? I know the new record Bloom is set to be released, and let our listeners know what's going on in your world.
Oh, well, I mean, firstly, thank you again for having me on. It's really nice to talk about the process with you, and you seem to know my mind quite well. So you have very, very good ears. So thank you.
Well, you have. I thank you.
But I guess to plug, I guess most obvious thing is the album. So I've got two singles out at the minute. So there's Better Days and Think About You, which is the one we just talked about, and the album Bloom will be out roughly May or June time. And I guess you can follow that process on my Instagram or at my website, which is rosiefreitertaylor.com. Yeah, but in the meantime, I guess, you could just check out the single. You could check out Think About You.
Awesome. Well, everybody, check out the single. Check out find Rosie online. And as soon as we can get back out playing live shows, go and check her out live. And when I'm back in the UK or wherever, if I see that you're playing, I'd love to come see you play and meet you.
Amazing. Yeah, I'd love to meet you too.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles, The Wrath of the Buzzard, PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is the Baltimore, Maryland alt-rock band Dosser. Their debut album, Brain Scan, is a heavy and exciting take on 90s grunge and alternative music. You can find them on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find their music on all the streaming services. Here's a snippet of their song, Kung Lao.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So you and I were just laughing about the fact that Rosie is so good that we hope that her music isn't so good that it goes over people's heads. I think there's still enough of a pop sensibility there that I'm hopeful that she's going to be this enormous artist, but she's so good that sometimes that goes over people's heads, and I hope that doesn't happen.
You know, I completely agree 100%, and I'm so glad that when we first started this podcast, Chris, you were the one that said, you know what, we have to take a chance on some artists that, you know, are unknown. And Sierra Sellers was the first one, Pittsburgh artist that we had on that we think is fantastic. She is fantastic. And now Rosie. And I can't believe, and I was careful. So I remember when I was younger, people would comment about your age. You couldn't possibly be this good at your age, but she's just light years in maturity beyond her years. She's just, her craft is insane. When she told me she did that guitar solo, I almost fell out of the chair.
Age aside, talk about how far she is into her music career, because the thing about age is that everybody's coming at it from a different perspective. Like, some people grew up, like Rosie did, in a musical household, so they may have had an instrument in their hand from the time they're 4 years old, or be writing songs from the time they're six, and then other people might not pick up a guitar till they're 20. But even age aside, the standard way of progressing as a musician and a songwriter is to start in your early years with simple songs, simple chord progressions,
yes,
normal pop melodies, basic musicianship. But to see someone at the beginning already pushing the envelope in the ways that you might do later in your career is really inspiring.
Yeah, that's you hit it in a nutshell. That's exactly what it is. You would think that, and there has been artists where I mentioned it in the episode, where they're late teens, early 20s, they'll do this bubblegum pop record, and you know, then they'll find their voice and find who they are, and they'll gain influences as they get older, and they'll make that jazzy, you know, contemporary record when they're 35, 40. Not her. She started right out of the gate. I mean, this stuff is very advanced, and just, you know, it didn't surprise me once we started getting into it where she kept saying, no, I played that part. She's the vision behind this. This is all in her head that's pouring out. It's amazing.
I laughed when you said, I'm going to have to go practice for the rest of my life now, after she said she played the guitar solo. And isn't it wild when you see young people who are so good at an instrument that it just makes you want to quit? Now, granted, Rosie, she's 21, so she's young, but it's not like she's 12 or something. She's a full-grown adult. But I know I've watched videos online of like six-year-olds playing drums and bass and stuff, and they're already so much better than me. And how deflating is that when you see that, you know?
For the listeners, check out her stuff on YouTube. Check out her playing guitar live. It is just mind-blowing. Yeah. I mentioned that early on in the episode of just her hand is playing a counterpart to what she's singing, and how she can split her brain and do that. It's just, it's unreal. And you know, she comes from a musical household, which that is just in and of itself, it resonates with me because I do too. And I had said to her, which is funny, I often wondered, where does it start? You know, if my parents didn't have musicality, did it start with me that I'm going to pass on? It has to start somewhere. And, you know, maybe your great-great-great-grandfather had musical capabilities, but it skipped a couple generations. It's definitely, it's hereditary. And the fact that she could speak to her father in musical terms and convey to him, this is what I'm hearing on the drums, and her dad could spit it back out and play it, is really, really neat.
Hey, and you're not going to find someone in the world with less knowledge of jazz than me, which is why I think I can listen to an artist like Rosie, and it just sounds so extra unique and interesting to me, is that she's taking inspiration from so many artists and styles that are alien to me.
You can't really pinpoint it. Like I said, there's elements of pop here. There's elements of soul. There's elements of jazz, but it's just kind of, it's so well rolled into one that you just can't say, oh, well, that's the pop part or the jazz part. It just meshes together. And she even mentioned that her training and her schooling, you know, taking jazz courses has now, it she doesn't even think about it. It just infiltrates everything that she writes.
Hey, a couple other things I wanted to touch on in this episode. One thing I always think about how impressed everyone is about people who can sing really high. Like, think about Justin from The Darkness or people like that. Who are some of the highest singers that you could think of, Chris? You listen to hair metal, so you definitely got to know some.
I mean, you know, you got Rob Halford. You had Jeff Tate from Queensryche back in the day. Mike from this band Steelheart, which you played a clip from them. I mean, these guys were, these guys were hitting notes that only dogs could hear.
But what people don't often talk about, Chris, is how difficult it is to sing low. I know you were talking about a part where Rosie went lower, but that just spawned this whole other way of thinking. My voice personally sits at like nicely in like a higher range, but I struggle with pitch when I go low. And singing low is an art in itself that people, I don't think about a lot.
It's, you know, it's hard to have pitch low. And typically a lot of times it's hard because you don't practice in that range. And right. practice makes your pitch good. And those two notes that she hits and those lines in the song, it was such, it almost feels like it shouldn't work. But again, it just does. And she was kind of almost oblivious to it. Like, well, yeah, you know, it's just something I did, but it's genius. It's so cool.
Yeah, all these elements, like you said, they just come natural to her. I mean, she's a classically trained musician who grew up in a musical household who's writing music that is very ahead of her age, I guess, is the best way to put it. I don't know if that's even the way to put it, because you could live to be 80 and not write the stuff that Rosie's writing, you know?
Yeah.
One other thing that I thought was really funny, this is just a little funny thing I made a note of. I was like, oh my God, that's so funny, is I laughed when she said that the song started as a voice note in her phone titled Slow Jam, because I can't tell you how many voice memos and Logic sessions I have that are called Slow Jam.
Yeah.
I think I'm on Slow Jam 56 in Logic right now.
Yeah. My voice memo song titles are hilarious in and of themselves. I completely relate with that. I'm really happy, and I got to, tip of the hat to you, Chris, for just pushing to take some chances on some lesser known artists. And I think that's a really cool angle to what we're doing here, because it's not all about the people that I know or the songs that we have 30 years of memories attached to. Sometimes it's about giving someone that deserves it a chance. And Rosie is amazing.
How cool is it going to be in like 3 years when Rosie Frater Taylor is this giant artist? And we're like, hey, we had her on the podcast when she was like 21 years old, releasing, her first singles. So, yeah. Hey, man.
And I'm knocking on our tour bus going, can I get tickets to your show? You don't remember me? I'm Chris that makes a podcast. Who? Click.
Yeah. 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 Rosie, you owe us coming back on the podcast when you sell a million albums. So.
There you go.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Speaking of owing, Chris, we owe the listeners of the podcast a million thanks for the continual support of our monthly fundraisers over at ChrisToMakesADifference.com.
Our listeners are the best, man. They really are. I don't just say that because they're our listeners. I really think that everyone's really cool.
And you have no idea. Each and every one of you, thank you so much for your generosity. We get these emails from the fundraisers each month, and they just thank us so much, which in turn, we have to thank you, because you're the ones on contributing and giving the money to help out these organizations. So thank you so much. Our fundraiser for May is the Cure LGMD2I Foundation. Limb-girdle muscular dystrophy type 2I is a progressively debilitating disease, and the foundation provides funding for research programs to establish a treatment for this disease. So please head over to ChrisToMakesADifference.com and give whatever you can. Thank you so much for helping us out.
Yeah, man. LGMD2I is a rare form of muscular dystrophy, and they are continually searching for a cure for this. And if you can go to ChrisToMakesADifference.com, pitch in $1, pitch in $2, pitch in $20, pitch in $100 if you can afford to, and it's all going to help. It all goes to a good cause. It's ChrisToMakesADifference.com. And you guys are awesome every month, for real.
That's right. And if you have any money left in that wallet for the price of a cup of coffee, you could join our VIP program, which is called Supporting Cast, and join Chris and I for the after party, which is bonus episodes each week that you could listen to. It's awesome. Head over to ChrisToMakes.com. You can find out all the information. There's different tiers, different levels, and we got some new cool merch coming out that you can get discounts on, and all kinds of other cool surprises coming up.
Yeah, so many people said to me, hey man, one episode of Chris to Makes a podcast each week is not enough. And we finally listened. All these episodes later, we're like, okay, we'll do this VIP program. You know, and if you want to see this podcast keep going and keep seeing us getting these awesome guests. You can help us out over at KristaMakes.com.
Heck yeah. Thanks to everybody who's joined so far. And make sure you join the Krista Makes the Podcast Facebook group, because that is where you can give us feedback on what you'd like to see moving forward with supporting Cast, the VIP program. I want to thank Rosie Frater-Taylor for being this week's guest. Her new album, Bloom, comes out on June 4th, so be sure to check that out. You can also pick it up on limited edition vinyl over at RosieFrater-Taylor.com. And we will see you next week.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.